I've been shot twice with the rubber bullets. I have a 5-inch gash on my leg. It hurts, but it's better to be alive and feel the pain than to be dead.
And that's the double truth, Ruth.
No peace. No peace. No justice. No peace.
These are the worst people in America. What they support is more power for themselves, and they're willing to use gangs of thugs to get it. Their latest demand is that we eliminate the police entirely. No more law enforcement in this country. It would mean never-ending terror for you and for your family.
Hey guys, this is Radical Empathy. I'm John. Let's talk about these protests. Thank you guys for tuning in. We are living in a historic moment. As I speak, there are protests and marches and rallies and demonstrations happening in pretty much every major city across this country. The United States and the world is grappling with systematic racism and injustice. This moment was sparked by the tragic murder and the senseless murder of George Floyd. And we are all processing this moment differently. There is no surprise that America is more divided than ever, specifically on these protests and what they symbolize, what they represent, and what they are asking for. In this episode, we're going to focus on the message of the protesters, what political change is trying to be achieved. It's not just about solidarity, it's about real, concrete political change. And we're going to talk specifically about the idea of defunding the police. Does policing in the United States need to take a radical transformation? I'm going to speak to two Jubilee directors about this because now is a time when you should be speaking with your peers and your family and your friends about these issues. And then I'm going to go to a protest in downtown LA and speak to protesters there directly. And then in the next episode, I'm going to have a discussion with my family who feels very differently about this moment than I do.
No peace!
And don't forget, no peace! We are still living through a pandemic.
No peace!
Let's get started.
No peace!
How is this?
Sounds good on my end.
Awesome. I can hear you as well.
Nice.
My name is Dan Chen. I'm a director at Jubilee. I'm Asian American, grew up in Kansas.
What the hell's going on right now in this moment from your perspective?
I feel like it's similar to what happened in 92 in LA, like the LA uprising in 92. It's like you have a piece of footage of police officers beating Rodney King on the ground.
He was lying face down, spread out. And when he was in that position, then they started hitting him.
This is audio taken from old news footage of the riots in 1992.
And I think a similar thing happened this week when the video of George Floyd being murdered is just so obviously heinous. Obviously, a lot of these feelings were brewing, especially in Black communities, but it was kind of on the consciousness of people, whether on the perimeter or not. And I think just that video and that moment, this is violence enacted by the state upon, in this case, a Black man and an American citizen. And the frustration is that murder can be done and life can be taken by the state unjustly. And I think just that video and that moment and that, along with people not having anything else to do but pay attention to the world right now because of COVID, I think all this kind of became a flashpoint.
Looters swarm in and help themselves.
There it is, there's the fire. It does appear that fire is the police station.
If burning down stores out of anger is a rejection of law and order, which I think it is, I think it's, you know, to view that productively, if one wants to view that productively, it's because law and order has not been demonstrated by the police to a large enough degree.
And do you support that kind of behavior? Like, where do you land?
I think that that kind of behavior comes from a frustration that the normal laws and processes do not work and have not worked. I don't think I want that kind of stuff to be necessary, but I don't think it's my decision whether or not. I don't think it's up to me.
How is the messaging from your perspective kind of this movement or of this flashpoint evolved over like the last 5 days?
From my perspective, it started with retribution. Mm-hmm. I think on the account of the protest, it's just like, hey, listen, we're going to burn some shit down because nothing changes unless you guys pay attention to what's happening. And then I think very quickly, I think organizers in the movement, not myself, but I think organizers in the movement from different parts of the country came up with different demands. I think different cities had different local demands for their local government. And I also think there's been a national call for defunding the police as like a national idea to consider.
Defund the police!
Defund the police!
Are y'all ready for a world free of police terror?
Yeah!
Are y'all ready for a world free of police terror?
Yeah!
It's hard to keep track of how much is changing, but at least here it seems like this idea of defunding the police is actually gaining some traction. And I'm curious, you know, if we really are going to make that big and that extreme and that radical of a move, where does that leave people who are currently police officers? And what is the future or the next evolution or iteration of like law enforcement? How will we keep people from murdering each other in the streets? As Tucker Carlson
will say.
Eric Garcetti is the mayor of Los Angeles, the second biggest city in America. His city would devolve into a murderous hellscape within hours if the police left.
I'm not a policy expert, right? So grain of salt. But I just think about like places I grew up in at certain times in my life. And also like you drive through Beverly Hills or Brentwood. There's not a police car on every corner. Like, those people are fine. And so I think the idea of getting rid of police isn't radical if you consider the neighborhoods where there's very little police presence already and the police do not really have a daily interaction with any of the people there. It's not to say that there is no need for any kind of body that can provide public safety. Mm-hmm. It's just to say that the current iteration of police that is heavily militarized, you know, they're coming into a neighborhood with body armor and face masks and tear gas cannons and tanks doesn't need to be that way. In fact, I think that if police didn't have that kind of amount of resources, like they would actually be perhaps incentivized to find better ways of interacting with communities. And I also think, you know, part of the reason why Beverly Hills and Brentwood are fine without police is because they have resources. Mm-hmm. And so if there is a way to take money that would be paying for weapons mm-hmm. and militarized equipment and putting that into community investment, I think we just may see a sharp decrease in the need for people who respond to problems with violence. And I think the police right now are designed to respond to problems in many communities with violence.
Just to reiterate, neither Dan or myself are policy experts. We're just two guys who like to talk about politics, and we're both filmmakers who work at the same media company. But the whole point of this podcast is to consider ideas that are far outside our own. So I think it's worth considering for yourself, is dismantling the status quo of law enforcement in this country possible? Is this something we can actually achieve? And is this something that's responsible to do? In order to explore this idea more, I decided it made the most sense for me to go to one of these protests. So I packed up a microphone and walked to downtown LA, where Black Lives Matter was holding a rally. It was my first time being around this many people in an extremely long time, so I was kind of excited and it felt really good to be in a crowd. At the same time, it was really anxiety-inducing because we are going through a pandemic and there are now thousands of people around me. I will say, people at these events are not practicing social distancing, and that is pretty concerning, especially when you think about how intensely we were all arguing about this not that long ago. As I got closer to the event, I noticed that there were tons of helicopters flying overhead. I noticed that there were National Guard trucks pulling in and troops lined around multiple buildings, maybe 100 troops scattered throughout the area on different floors of different buildings, different vantage points, all heavily armed. Needless to say, this created a sort of environment of hostility. When I got close to the center of the crowd, I was able to hear some of the speakers speaking at the event, so I'll let you guys listen to that. Last clip of audio is interesting because depending on who you are will determine how you feel when you hear it. The irrational and inexcusable loss of Black life provokes immense pain, specifically in some of the protesters standing around me. But you also hear a tremendous amount of anger in that clip. So to be fully transparent with you guys, as the host of this podcast, I found myself suddenly feeling alienated in this crowd. The pain that was being shared was not my pain. It wasn't a pain I was familiar with. So I needed to hear the thoughts of people in the crowd, specifically people of color.
If you want, you could say your name, or you could just tell me what your thoughts are on this whole situation.
My thoughts on the whole situation is, first of all, not only do we have to defund the police, we should aim our frustration at the politicians that we elected, because they're the lawmakers. That's why we have these signs.
This is Mel. He was one of the first people I spoke to because he was standing towards the kind of outer perimeter of the crowd. He was with a group of friends, and when I went up to ask them if any of them wanted to speak, he immediately volunteered.
And the people that's in office are holding them accountable, and so they can hold the cops accountable. How is it that we can come out here to protest police brutality and then be faced with police brutality while we're protesting?
Have you experienced that this week?
Yes, I've been shot twice with the rubber bullets. I have a 5-inch gash on my leg. It hurts, but it's better to be alive and feel the pain than to be dead.
And when did that happen?
That was Friday night, right here on 4th and Spring.
And when they say defund the police, do you agree with that?
Yes.
What do you envision the future of?
What do I envision in the future? But how can we spend billions of dollars to fund a police system that doesn't protect the citizens? Why don't we put that money into the education system? Teachers could be getting paid more. We should get the police out of the school system, hire security guards that's trained, counselors, all these things that help build up community, instill confidence in the people. May we not be afraid of the police or the forces anymore. This shit is over with. It's time, we don't need a reform. We need to abolish the old system.
And do you yourself consider running for office at any time in the future? Or do you?
I used to think so, but now I don't think so, because you gotta be a liar to be a politician.
And
you gotta be
a
liar.
Why?
Why is that? Yeah. Because you don't want to fight the system that you just joined. You gotta be a liar. If you're a politician and you join the system like the AOCs, you see it kind of the pushback that they get.
Yeah. Thanks, man.
All right.
I'm JJ. I'm 50 years old, and I'm here because enough is enough.
Are you from LA? Are you born and raised?
Yeah, I was born in Watts, California. Yeah, so I done been through the 92 riot, all that. I done been through it. I was 23 years old at the 92 riot, so.
This is bigger.
This is much bigger, because this right here, this went nationwide. Like they say, this went viral. And if you look around, there's all different nationalities out here. And they feel the same pain we feel, so enough is enough.
Are you worried about COVID right now?
Yeah,
because this is all kind of overlap.
Yeah, that's why we stay in our distance too. Yeah. We still stay in our distance. I really want to be all in the middle over there, but I don't want to, you know what I'm saying? We still got to think about the COVID-19.
When they say defund the police, do you agree with that? And what do you envision for the future of the police?
Well, right now, it's like this. Corrupt police need to be punished to the fullest extent. You know what I'm saying? It's this thing, if you did that, or another minority did that, you know what I'm saying? We couldn't do that. Now, well, you know, they'd be wanting to lynch us. You know what I'm saying? Or we probably wouldn't even make it to the police station. They wear a badge to protect and serve, not to kill on camera. You know, that's just not right. There's no justice in that.
As the sun got lower, people began to spread out on the lawn in front of LA City Hall. And the energy got a lot lighter. People started to show up in cars blasting music. So I decided to go talk to some of them.
Do you think things are gonna change substantially?
I hope so. I can only pray. It's hard being black and staying hopeful. I think that's one of the biggest...
This is Aria. She's 23 years old.
It is what it is.
Sorry. The only reason we are getting attention or anything like that is because we're shutting off the money. We're in the middle of the street. Businesses are closed. Everything's not able to operate normally. And that's what's, you know, making uproar. So I think that's the solution is, you know, have to fuck up the norm. And that's the only way we're going to make change.
Well, life for none of us has been a crystal star. But we must keep moving.
I then passed this guy, Marcus Price. He was blasting Martin Luther King's speeches on the speaker that he had brought in.
If you can't run, walk. If you can't walk, crawl. But by all means, keep moving.
And he was giving these kind of evangelical sermons about race and faith to go along with them. So here's a clip of this.
And it starts in the subconscious. It starts in the heart. It's not, you can't deal with the topical. It starts in the heart. Hallelujah. We have to have a transformation in the heart. We have to transform how we see each other subconsciously, how we subconsciously view each other. We're never going to see change unless we deal with the internals of our soul. We're never going to see the change. You can't deal with the tree by picking its fruit. You must dig into the soil. And dig into the soil and the root of the tree to get the heart of the tree. What's happening here is a mixture of things happening here. It's people who are tired of the same thing. It's the people who are frustrated. It's people who have been timid at first, and then they build up to see, okay, I kind of see now. Now I see. Now I see why people say Black Lives Matter instead of All Lives Matter. Now I can see why they say that now. It's people that are here that didn't believe that at first, but now they believe that because they see the truth. They see why people say Black Lives Matter instead of All Lives Matter. Yes, all lives matter. But it's the black ones that are being pressed down. And not just the black lives, it's the black, the essence of being a black man. Hallelujah.
I approached probably 20 or 30 different protesters, and about a dozen of them let me record them. But nobody stuck with me quite as much as this woman, Sheila. She was there with her twin sister. They were both 60 years old.
What brought me here today was the just trying to hold the space for both the outrage that I feel and the enormity of this moment in time when people are starting to realize that we're all connected, that we're all one, that we're not separate, that we're human. And this travesty against humanity is something that begs for people to cry out and to be very clear that it's not okay. I struggle so much with seeing that image, the video, how painful that was for everybody to witness. It's time. This is such a pivotal moment in time. And it's kind of interesting because I thought at first that COVID would be the thing that slowed people down to help them to realize that we really have a responsibility to each other to stop, to erase that sense of separation, the fear that keeps us paralyzed and separate and doing things that harm others and being inconsiderate. But it wasn't enough. So now in the middle of this pandemic, we have this crisis, which is this enormous opportunity to do something different. And I just feel so powerfully moved. I have been a lesbian for all of my life. I came out in the 70s. Black woman. So many ways that I have been marginalized for so many years. And I know that pain. I know that sense of separateness. In one sense, it's been a real privilege because I've lived a life that way. So I've always examine the things that I grew up with, the beliefs that I was taught, and had to really separate them one by one to see which ones resonated, which ones were the lies, which ones were the truth. And everybody has to take that journey for themselves. We learn things from our parents, from our schools, from our communities that we never think about. And if you never bother to examine them, then you walk around with all of those beliefs inside of you. And until you've had a chance to really look at them and see them for what they are and to embrace the ones that really resonate, that are true about all of humanity, then you really haven't done the work.
A lot of these protesters have been getting arrested after curfew, so as the sun was going down, I made sure to make my way back home. But those words from Sheila kind of rattled around in my head on the way back. These protests are exhilarating for some because they show how many people share their values. But they're also a time that highlight our divisions. Not everybody agrees with these protests. Not everybody feels the same. Are we as a country capable of doing the work that Sheila describes? And finding and sharing these powerful truths. That's something I'm not sure of. Most of us have really been witnessing this moment in time through social media. We've been seeing small clips and pieces and snippets. About a week ago, most of this content was extremely violent and distressing and disturbing, but over the past few days, the tone of the content has evolved. There's been a lot of videos surfacing of police officers and National Guard kneeling with crowds and people cheering and shaking hands and hugging. A lot of us want things to be over. I've seen a lot of these videos on TikTok, so I thought it would be good to talk about some of these clips with our director, Michael.
Fuck those TikToks. That's some bullshit. Like, I'm sorry.
There's a lot of those, like the sentimental ones. With the cops, like, shaking hands with people.
I fucking can't with that shit. Like, if I see one of those things again, I might lose it. Like, that is silly to, like, try and... It's... For people, that's comfort. It makes people feel comfortable, which is what we all want right now. We want to be comfortable. But everyone needs to just fucking own that this shit is uncomfortable, it's ugly, it's gross, it's years and years of oppression. Like, it's not going to happen through like people shaking hands and like calling in a day. And then the police officers go right back to doing what the fuck they were doing before. I'm sorry. I'm past that. Like, no, we need systematic changes. We need like to start from fucking scratch. And yes, it's terrible. It's not a good feeling. It's not a good feeling to not know what's next.
What do you think is the best way for governments to react right now? Do you think this is something that can be solved just through elections and through new candidates and through new legislation? Like, how far does the root go? How far do you think we have to pull it out?
That's a start. I think that's a start. I think this is not going to happen overnight. This is not going to happen at the end of the year. This is going to be years and years and years of work. And there are many, many organizers who have been working for years to try and get to where we are today. This is not something that just like, so honestly, shout out to all the organizers because they've been, I know people who've been working on this shit for years. They've been waiting for today, you know, they've been waiting to hit the streets like this and getting the numbers that they're hitting with everyone out there on the line. So, and it makes me, as a Black person, I feel, and this is what people don't really get, I feel overwhelmed and stressed. So I feel overwhelmed with all the change that needs to happen. And I wonder and I question if we are able to do it.
Has the events of the last week or so affected personal relationships in your life in any unique ways that you want to share?
I had a lot of people reach out to me, like, out of nowhere, and just like, they want me to basically give them the answers. And I'm like, I can't do that. Like, I can't. I'm angry. I'm pissed. Like, you know, like, I don't have time to try and teach someone anything. And also, it's not going to happen. Like I said, it's not going to happen in a week. Like, this is years of work. People have been working for years on this. So I just think like people need to go inform themselves, but I'm just upset. So it's hard for me to even talk to anyone. It's been hard to go to work like the past few days, like to be honest, and just like act like nothing is happening. So to answer your question, I've had unique experience with myself, like in my personal self, and trying to make space for like rage, Black rage.
I've heard people talk about that rage a few different times in the last week or so. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something that's being misunderstood. Mm-hmm. 'Cause like you see, like you'll see some like Antifa white kid with a skateboard smash a window. And like, that's probably not the same thing as like the people of Minneapolis, like burning the precinct building. Mm-hmm. And what does that rage embody, that Black rage that you're talking about? And like, for somebody who watches Fox News, who sees that rage and feels afraid, and it's like, that's the mob, so to speak, what would you say to that?
Well, rage doesn't have a look, first of all. Rage is not, doesn't have to be smashing windows. Rage is, you know, not being able to leave your apartment, you know, in fear that you might like fucking go off on someone asking how your day is, you know, like fear, like rage is like every time I've talked about something around this, I have a moment where I like have to catch myself where I feel like I'm gonna like just lose it, you know, like that's rage for me. It's like I feel this like thing inside where I can't necessarily word, I can't explain it, I can't get it out, but I'm upset, I'm angry because of how I've been treated all my life. This is a lifetime of pain, you know. It's not something that like, oh, one person pissed me off. No, this is a lifetime of treatment, from teachers calling me nigger when I was a fucking 9-year-old kid, you know, like shit like that. Like that shit, it haunts you. It sticks with you. So it's years of that. It doesn't look like, you know, throwing a fucking skateboard. It's like, I can't leave my bed, you know? I can't put on clothes. I can't fucking eat. And I'm mad about it because it's your fault. It's your fault. It's your fault, you know? You don't want to blame people. You want to forgive. You want to put shit behind you, but you can't. So that's rage for me. And when I go to that place, it's there, you know, I feel it. And then I have to like put it back and put it away and move on, because this is the reality. This is the world. You have to like, in order to stay sane, in order to get money, in order to like stay alive, you have to put that shit aside and like continue on with your life. So yeah, that's rage for me.
All right, guys, we're going to leave it there for today. Shout out to Dan. Shout out to Michael. Thank you to everybody at the protest who let me interview them. Our next episode will be a discussion between myself and my family, who have very different political views about this moment. And we're going to try and get through that. If you are somebody who's planning on attending the protests or the rallies, do not forget that COVID-19 is on the rise and you need to protect yourself. And if you are somebody who is willing to be radically empathetic, I think you need to be willing to reconsider your reality. And like Sheila said, do the work. Until next time, over and out.
When you talk about a revolution, most people think violence. Without realizing that the real content of any kind of revolutionary thrust lies in the principles and the goals that you're striving for, not in the way you reach them. On the other hand, because of the way this society is organized, because of the violence that exists on the surface everywhere, you have to expect that there are going to be such explosions. You have to expect things like that as reactions.